Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Joellen Lind, Tom Bevin of RealClearPolitics.com, and John McCarron of Northwestern University. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We're back in home base this evening after having spent the last week in St. Paul, Minnesota, at the Republican Convention. And we've got 2 hours of rock'em sock'em discussion because it has been quite a time since we've had our phone lines open. Our thanks to Chris Roebling for sitting in for yours truly last week. So we've got lots of politics to discuss. 1-800-723-8289. One of the things we're going to discuss as the program unfolds, not only are we going to discuss media coverage, but we are also going to be talking about whether or not the events in Minneapolis, St. Paul last week, what impact will they have on the race for president in the principal battleground states. That'll come up a little bit later on in the broadcast. But first of all, I want to begin by welcoming John McCarron from Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Journalism has been one of the stories. You, like most of the political junkies in the world, you watched the convention last week and the one the previous week in Denver on television. Overall impressions of the two parties and the perceptions that those parties have based on what you saw as a trained journalist.
Well, I was struck, I think, Bruce, by how alike the two conventions were, in this, certainly in the sense of how family was put out there and bio-narrative was put out there almost as the be-all and end-all and how you should, who you should vote for. I was kind of startled with this because I'm kind of a wonky kind of guy, you know, numbers and who's going to pay for what. And I want to know whether we're going to raise the Social Security retirement age to 70 or whether we're going to have a next generation of nuclear attack submarines in order to, you know, or can we get out of that business? And I was disappointed because there was none of that kind of detail there.
Dan Proft also joins us. He's our card-carrying conservative tonight. Dan, nice to have you with us.
Good to be here.
You were there for much of the week. One of the things that the McCain campaign wanted to sort of eliminate is this tag that the Democrats are trying to put on him that he is the third Bush term. Did he meet the measure of that challenge?
Well, I think he did largely, but I also think that that's a tag that they're going to have a very hard time selling anyway, without McCain doing a whole lot. I mean, there's not, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of voters that remember that McCain ran against George Bush in 2000. There's a lot of voters, including in the Republican Party, that remember McCain opposing the kind of the consensus party position on issues ranging from immigration to stem cell research to the Bush tax cuts the first go around. So this idea, and particularly with how McCain talked about kind of his personal journey to this place, the idea that McCain is anything other than his own man is a sales pitch that the Democrats are going to have a very, very difficult time selling.
Joellen Lind also joins us. She is with Valparaiso University School of Law. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Card-carrying Democrat.
Absolutely.
Your reaction to last week, and also, did McCain, can you give him some credibility for maybe talking around that issue of being a third term of George Bush?
Well, I think that's certainly what the convention was all about. You would think that there was the birth of a new party in America called the non-Bush third party, sort of running against the Republican Party, which is a very odd thing for people to put themselves into when you're trying to distance yourself from a sitting president who's from your own party. You only let him have 20 minutes of video broadcast. I thought that was odd.
But that is politics 101, right?
That's 20 minutes
more than Lyndon Johnson got at the Democratic Convention in 68.
I think people do see through it, and so I think it shows the sort of the difficulty of trying to accomplish that. I'll just mention The Economist, which came out just this last week, talking about missing the old McCain, and one of the things the article says is that based on the positions he's taken, going more right than to the center, they're calling him Bush 3.
Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics joins us. Congratulations on your continued and growing success at what
you
do.
Thanks very much.
Your reaction to the speech, and did the new John did the old John McCain show up last week in St. Paul?
I think he did to a large degree. I think, as Dan said, you know, if you look at this, the Obama campaign has tried to hit him as Bush's third term every which way. McCain's favorables are still pretty high. I mean, he still does, despite the fact that he has tacked to the right, did tack to the right in the primaries. His maverick image is still largely intact, and I think he actually did an effective job. not only with the first day sort of restructuring the convention to handle the Hurricane Gustav, gave him sort of a leadership role, gave him a little bit of, I think, perhaps redemption for the party itself. And then with the pick, Sarah Palin. I mean, he went out of his way to reinforce the idea that he is going to cast himself as a maverick, as a change agent. And that's what he looked for in his vice presidential pick. And I think they made a good start of it.
He said country first. That was the theme. Mm-hmm. By picking Sarah Palin, who does not have as much experience as many would like her to have, did he put country first or did he put his election first? Dan Pryor.
Well, I think he put country first. I also think he did what the Republican Party desperately needed, was to start rebranding the party about who the party is about and who the future of the party is. And the future of the party is governors, young governors and elected officials and leaders like Sarah Palin, like Bobby Jindal, like Linda Lingle, the governor of Hawaii, who spoke at the convention, Michael Steele, who spoke at the convention. I thought John McCain did a great job of introducing a new crop, a new generation of Republican leaders. And I think it was very consistent with the message. Not to mention this whole Sarah Palin experience thing. I mean, the Democrats are kind of so shocked, they were caught so flat-footed by the pick, that they're kind of vomiting all over themselves as they hypocritically attack Sarah Palin on everything that is embodied by their nominee.
John, does McCain and do the planners of this party, do they get a gold star for completely shifting the image of the party in basically one significant decision and then everything that followed through it? I don't ever recall seeing as many women speak. I mean, 80% of the people that spoke were women at that convention.
Well, they certainly did shift the emphasis. What I don't understand, maybe Dan can explain, is why they felt the need to go right. I mean, to turn right so hard when we're going into a general election. I thought, you know, the textbook is you tack toward the center, and here we have this
But you got to solidify your base, you know, first.
Well, not just...
Well, so I guess the answer is the evangelicals stay home on November the 4th or whatever, unless they have someone out there who's anti-choice.
Well, I
don't get it.
No, actually, they're both pro-school choice. Is that... We were talking about schools? Or
well,
what choice were you talking about?
I was
about?
Talking abortion. About abortion.
Oh, okay. The point in the Palin pick was excite the conservative base, because I got to tell you, going into that convention, this was about stopping Barack Obama. It was less about promoting John McCain.
What were they going to do on election day? That's what I...
No. Well, the reality is you need...
Stay home?
You need an excited base to turn out. John McCain already occupies the center. So Sarah Palin is a pick that really is beautiful in the fact that it appeals, it rebrands the party to appeal and bring new people in at the same time that it excites the base to turn out.
I want to get your reaction, Joel. It really is a twofer. I mean, they got a twofer for that. And again, in the middle of the campaign or in the middle of the convention, they showed Vice President Dick Cheney in Georgia, the country, not the state, waving as he arrived. And boy, the juxtaposition of Dick Cheney, on that newscast, juxtaposed to Sarah Palin, that in a heartbeat, in one photo, changed the image of the Republican Party. Back shortly from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Grand Rapids, Michigan to Youngstown, Ohio, where America's next president will probably be selected because of the turnouts in those particular regions of their respective states. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. And by the way, we will be going back to Michigan. We will be going back to Youngstown, Ohio before the end of this campaign as we keep our promise to you to continue to take America's political pulse each and every Sunday night. Joelle and Lynn, you were chomping at the bit to respond to something that Dan Proft had to say.
Well, I don't want to be the person who comes in and casts a pall on the party atmosphere over Sarah Palin, but I think the people need to worry about whether they're going to wake up the morning after the election if the Republicans win and find out they've got Dick Cheney, younger version, in a dress, basically. The problem that I have with her is her extremism, and she just doesn't represent the mainstream viewpoints on the important things that people really care about in this election, and she doesn't represent what is really in the interest of women in this election. Women need things like equal pay for equal work. They need to have affordable food. We've just had the highest increase in food prices in 17 years.
She's against affordable
food? Well, I think she doesn't care much about whether the average person can buy food or not. She's more concerned about whether God has told her that we should drill oil in Alaska. I think she's...
She's the extremist. Wow.
Well, those are her words.
She said she's more concerned about the price of food than she's more concerned about God telling her to drill Alaska than the price of food.
I don't see based on her speech that she's a person who has many specific recommendations for how to help the women who are very much like herself, somebody who may have 5 children, a special needs child, somebody who isn't pulling down the salary of the governor of the state of Alaska, who may need health care that's affordable, who may need child care that's affordable, and nothing was said about that in the speech.
But would you acknowledge, again, that in a campaign, that when you leave conventions, the major party candidates have about 45% of the vote, and it is the 10% of the people that maybe don't watch the conventions, they may not even watch the debates. These are people that are moved by a variety of different issues, including, by the way, reading National Enquirer,
right?
Reading other stories, seeing somebody on Johnny on the
cover of Us magazine.
Us magazine. These are the people that make up. And by the way, many of them are women.
Yes.
Many of them are juggling, careers.
Right.
Many of them have 5 children. Some of them are dealing with special needs children.
Right.
And isn't it? I mean, the fact that there's been more excitement, more life breathed into the Republican Party because of one choice. Granted, a lot of it is steeped in controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that give the Republicans at this moment in time, John? Does it give them an edge in finding that 5.1 of the 10%? That could mean victory.
For 72 hours, it gave him a tremendous edge. Suddenly, everybody wanted to see not only her, but her daughters and, the beau up in Alaska, who, guns and hockey. It gave him a real boost. But the thing is, it's a high wire act, Bruce. I mean, now for the next 60 days, we're going to learn all sorts of things about these folks. And a lot of people may discover things about their beliefs and whatnot that they might find rather extreme.
I think that's why her speech was so important. And the fact that so many people watched it, I think, is even better for her. There was a rush to fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. And part of that discussion, to frame her. Who is she? Nobody knows. What's she going to bring? And, people on the left want to frame her as an extremist who's a Bible thumper, pistol packing type of person. And I think that's why her speech was so important, because she was able to sort of bypass the media and speak directly to America. And I think the problem for Democrats is she didn't come across as an extremist. She came across as a fairly, likable, almost average in terms of like her connection with the audience. She is. She's a mother of 5. She happens to be juggling. She's a PTA mom. She's a hockey mom. All that stuff. So we will see this continued battle to frame her, because there still are blanks and things that need to be filled in.
But her speech, I know the Democrats are focused on some of her kind of shots across the bow, because only Joe Biden is allowed to go on the attack. She is not. Her speech was actually an interesting combination of both poignancy and tenacity. When she talked about her son that's going to be deployed in Iraq, I mean, she reminds people that both John McCain her and, frankly, Joe Biden have skin in the game when it talks about when you talk about the war on terror, because they have kids in the service. She talked about being an advocate for special needs kids. And yet she didn't fill in the blank. But oh, by the way, she did increase special education funding in Alaska by 175%. And just acknowledging that special needs kids and families with special needs kids is an important issue was huge, huge, especially to the millions of families that have special needs children.
The other thing I think that she was able to do, and that is, I mean, this was my 19th convention. My first convention was back in 1964. And I would say that this is one of the five defining moments in the history of the Republican Party, in the contemporary Republican Party. One was in 64 with Barry Goldwater. One was in 68 with Richard Nixon, talking about the silent majority. Ronald Reagan in 76 when he lost the nomination, but he helped define the party in Kansas City. Certainly, 4 years later in Detroit, when Reagan accepted the nomination. This is when huge shifts in the Republican Party occurred. And the other one took place last week in St. Paul. It was Sarah Palin. She went way around Mitt Romney. She went way around Mike Huckabee. And to this point, she went way around Hillary Clinton as the defining female politician in America. Like her or not, and again, we don't know a lot about her, the fall from grace can be a brutal one, and we will see in the next 58 days whether that happens. But right at this moment, this was, not only was it a grand slam homer, it was a defining moment in the future of the Republican Party. Now, having said that, she raised the bar real high for John McCain, who followed the night before. My reaction was that if you divided that speech in half, the first half was terminally boring, poorly delivered. But then, with about 10 minutes to go, John McCain started to feel his oats. He told his story. We had heard his story, I would say, almost ad nauseum. And it's hard to say. I don't mean to be pejorative in saying that, but the reality is the story of his heroism had been played over and over and over, but the reality is nobody tells that story like John McCain. And then he finished with a flourish. Let's watch.
Fight with me. Fight with me. Fight for what's right for our country. Fight for the ideals and character of a free people. Fight for our children's future. Fight for justice and opportunity for all. Stand up to defend our country from its enemies. Stand up for each other. For beautiful, blessed, bountiful America. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up and fight. Nothing is inevitable here. History.
I've heard scores of speeches in my life. I've never been at any political rally where I saw more tears in more eyes of men than I saw in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting points, you talk about him telling the story about his captivity, obviously, as a POW. But I thought what was really an interesting moment, particularly cutting against the Democrats' kind of line of argumentation against McCain and other Republicans, was when he talked about how he abhors war. As a military, as a POW, as a military hero, as somebody with a son in the service, he abhors war. So this is not about warmongering Republicans and peacenik Democrats. This is about both parties who want peace, who have very different ways to get there. And I thought that was really a substantive point, and a point that John McCain can say with a certain amount of integrity that very few others can.
Joe Ellen, your response. Your response to the issue of the speech, of the flourish with the speech, the image, the lasting image that most Americans have. And by the way, the ratings were very good. They weren't quite as big as Barack Obama's, but they were very, very close. You know, a lot of people saw that speech.
There is no doubt, I think, in anybody's mind that was a moving moment. I mean, I told you the last time I was on the show, I'm from a military family. I think back to Saving Private Ryan and the the scenes at the beach in Normandy, and all of those things really move Americans in ways that are indescribable. Words just aren't enough. But that doesn't mean that he's the person who should be elected president. And it bothers me very much that you have an entire convention where there isn't much discussion about things like Secretary Paulson today, for instance, telling us that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are going to have to be taken over by the federal
government.
Because
you don't accentuate the negative at any convention. That's politics.
Or talk about the hard choices that may need to be made in order to balance the budget.
Right. I actually...
President of the Democrat convention? Talk about Freddie and Fannie?
You ignore that. Tom Bevin.
Well, I just want to say about the speech, I agree with you. I think he saved it really in the last few minutes, and it was fairly remarkable and surprising in the end. But what he did, which was interesting, is he played on his...
For a man who is universally criticized for his lack of showmanship,
right,
he felt it.
No, he definitely did.
Talking
what he did
applause,
that was interesting, if you look
it.
Back on the speech, because the first part was sort of boring, and I think people got lost. If you go back and read the speech and you look at the way that he set it up, I mean, what he did was he played off of his military heroism and his story and used that as the pivot point to say, I'm a fighter for you. Mm-hmm. I'm a fighter for families. Right. I'm a fighter for reform. I'm a fighter against Washington, which is a really sharp strategic move for him. Again, it was the entire sort of point of his convention, but he did it in a very deft way that I think most people may not even recognize.
But also in the middle of that speech, he also did something else. I mean, he recited some serious mistakes that the Republicans had made, talking about that it was Republicans had gone and they had fallen out of touch
the Obama campaign was quick to point out that he was in Washington the entire time.
What I'm saying is there were a lot of lines there that did not get a lot of applause. These were not popular lines from the people in that room, certainly those that got excited about Sarah Palin. Back shortly, 1-800-723-8029. Your call's next. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From South Bend, Indiana to Tallahassee, Florida, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations and XM Satellite Radio, POTUS 130. Nice to have you with us this evening. Our Democrat tonight is Jo Ellen Lind. She is the Professor of Law and Associate Dean for Faculty Development at Valparaiso University School of Law. Dan Proft also joins us. He is a conservative political activist and a commentator for Don Wade and Roma on our flagship station, WLS Radio. John McCarron, for 27 years, was a reporter and columnist with the Chicago Tribune. He now is an adjunct lecturer at the Medill School of Journalism. And Tom Bevan joins us. He is the publisher and founder of RealClearPolitics.com, the best site on the web if you want to know what's going on insofar as polling, political opinion. And again, we're going to be talking about that more as the program unfolds. But we have lots of callers on the line. Let's go to Bill in Rantoul, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Hello, yeah, this is Bill from Rantoul. First of all, I wanted to make comments about John McCain and the Vietnam era. Yeah. I'm a Marine Corps Vietnam veteran, honorably discharged, served in Vietnam with an infantry unit. I take nothing away from John McCain being a POW. And I had something else I wanted to say, but was I correct in hearing one individual up there saying that the Democratic Party is vomiting all over themselves?
Yes,
because
you are
of
correct.
Sarah Palin?
Yes, you were correct.
I mean, that's almost like some of the statements that I've heard that the Liberal Party or the Democrats aren't patriots. Well, I spent 8 years in the Marine Corps. Vietnam is over. Victory seems to be the utmost thing here, no matter what the cost, and it'll be the war right or wrong. I've had a nephew that served 2 terms in Afghanistan already, and he's doing it for the money. Again, I take nothing away from Senator McCain, but he needs to understand that the Vietnam War is over and that politics shouldn't put victory before the country. Victory is not necessary if it's not valid. Sarah Palin, I don't know anything about her to make comments. I find it unfortunate that every time a legitimate question gets asked based on the issues that I heard on the news this morning that one individual said, well, she'll come out when we're ready for her to come out. And then, like John McCain, you know, picked her. I was under the impression that he had actually looked the other way, but then had changed their mind. And how can this be country before party?
All right, let's let Dan respond to that.
Well,
thanks very much
there's a lot there. I mean, one of the things, actually, John, this was John McCain's pick. If you read the New York Times piece that kind of peeked into the war room as this decision was made, before this decision was made a week ago Friday, you had some people in the Pawlenty camp, some people in the Romney camp, and it was really John McCain in the Palin camp, and it was his call. And again, reinforcing, as Tom said earlier, his maverick image. I think John McCain is aware that the Vietnam War is over. I think I can say that safely. And I thought also, too, he's so aware of that actually it was John McCain striking out on his own, largely, talking about the surge in Iraq, and that was the direction we needed to go. When everybody else, particularly Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and a lot of others, said this would just kind of get us deeper into the quagmire of Iraq, now full circle Thursday night, Barack Obama says the surge exceeded anybody's wildest dreams in terms of its success. Well, anybody's wildest dreams, of course, except his opponent, John McCain.
John McCarron, your response.
Well, one thing, I mean, the most damaging thing on foreign affairs I think John McCain has said in the last month is we're all Georgians now. His immediate reflexive off-the-cuff response to the Soviet and Georgia contretemps over Ossetia and whatnot, and that kind of scared me. That reminds me of listening to President Bush saying the State of the Union, that we are now confronted with an axis of evil. So I have some sympathy with your caller, being a veteran. I'm a veteran. And, I just think maybe we got to stand back and work a little diplomacy here, talk to people, and see if we can maybe avoid going to general quarters every time we're offended by something another nation does.
Okay. Let's take a call. Carlos in Houston, Texas, listening to us on XM Radio. Go ahead, Carlos.
Hey, Bruce, you know how much I hate John McCain, okay? And this is the only pick that would get him to get my vote. But let me say this. I believe he picked her because he wants to destroy the conservatives, because when he gets done with his liberal social policies, poor Palin is going to be tainted by him and she'll never become president. But I'm going to go ahead and vote for him because I'm a conservative first, Republican last, and I believe she would probably be the best president we had since Ronald Reagan. I can't stand McCain, and I hate the fact that I got to vote for him, but I don't trust him, and I believe he's going to destroy the conservatives by this pick.
You're not going to be in any commercials.
Carlos, you know what? I remember people, you called this program, you said you would never vote for him, so that was a huge turnaround for you.
That's Ronald Reagan in a dress, buddy.
We have Ronald Reagan in a dress.
Or Dick Cheney
in a dress. I think Dick Cheney in a dress might be more interesting to watch.
I think it's just Sarah Palin in a dress, actually.
Let's go to Tony in South Bend, listening to us on WLS Radio. Nice to hear from Indiana tonight. Go ahead.
Hey, Bruce. You know, it's so tiring to hear Democrats talk to Republican followers like we're ignorant. An example of that is talking about how far right the convention was, how far right the conservative base is, and yet you have the two most liberal senators on the Democratic ticket. So, you know, let's point that out, number one. Number two, Obama's speech had no more substance than McCain's speech did. That coming from a guy that will point into the camera and say, I'll challenge McCain anytime on any issue, really, which is why he didn't take him up on one town hall meeting, not one. So your Democratic friends need to pony up.
Let's let Joe Allen respond to your fellow Indianan.
Yes, I think Obama should have agreed to do town hall meetings with John McCain. I think it would have benefited him incredibly. He comes across really well in small groups as well as he does in large groups. With regard to the issue about how extreme either party is, I spent a lot of time over the weekend, in fact, preparing for this program, reading the platforms of both parties, long material. And I would have to say that I think that the Democratic Party really is trying to move in a more center direction, and the person who's actually trying to push it there is Barack Obama. If you look, for instance, at the issue of abortion, this is the first time you see anything in the planks of the platform that would try to meet people halfway in the issue of abortion, and that's the idea that we can all agree that the number of abortions should be reduced in the United States and the conditions causing people to feel like they need to think about the choice of abortion should be changed so that, for instance, women have enough child care, food to feed their children, etc. The Republican platform doesn't meet anybody halfway with regard to the constitutional amendment on abortion, with regard to a whole bunch of other things. So,
will anyone read it?
Those might be words on a page. Barack Obama, the caller is right, rated the most liberal senator by National Journal, succeeding Dick Durbin, also from Illinois, of course, the year previous. On abortion, Barack Obama is the most liberal. He was the most liberal state senator in the country. Now he's the most liberal U.S. senator in the country. This is a guy who voted against banning live birth abortions in Illinois, a measure that passed the U.S. Senate 98-0, including with the votes of Ted Kennedy and Hillary Clinton. So you want to talk about extremism on abortion? You're talking Barack Obama.
Well, this is the first time in the history of the Democratic Party in recent decades where there's been any movement toward the center on the issue of abortion, and it would not have happened without Barack Obama being willing to have it go there.
I wish
and
his
he talked about it.
He
talked about it
usual.
In his speech.
One other observation I might make, having been to a number of both Democratic and Republican conventions, in my memory, with the exception of let's say going back to certainly in the 70s and 80s, this was the least religious convention, Republican convention, I think I was ever at. There was not a lot of religious speakers. Obviously, there was an invocation at the end. It was a priest. It wasn't necessarily there were no evangelical ministers that either opened or closed the sessions. So that was another surprising thing to me. Let us go to Let's go to Anita, listening to us in Chicago on WLS. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm just really tired of the Democratic women telling all the other women in the United States what we want and what we need. The people who represent them, the likes of your Steinem going back a long way, and even the newer ones coming up, don't represent most of the women here that I know of. And I know a lot of women, and we're working middle-class women. The other thing I'm opposed to is they all keep saying, oh, the economy's so bad, since the because of the Bush administration. What have the Democrats in the House and the Congress done since they took over under Nancy Pelosi, another wonderful Democratic woman who's going to help all women out of her mansions? And I'm really tired of it. We know what we want. Don't tell me what I want and that this woman isn't any good. I want to know about energy. She's one of the few people who knows more than most men. I want to know about a person with a child of having special needs. My son's a teacher with a lot of special needs children in the area, and I think they need to be helped. So the women who represent the Democratic Party are, I'd say, mostly not any of the women that I know or that represent most of the women in the country.
Yeah, but on issues like abortion, the polling I've seen is that the country is about at Roe v. Wade. That's sort of the attitude that most people take. I'm talking empirically, you know, poll data. So you may feel that way. That's fine for you. But I think abortion, frankly, is a losing issue for the Republican Party
Time
around.
Joe Ellen?
Abortion's not the only issue that affects all women, though. I mean, so I'd like to know. I know there have been a lot of abortions, but you look around and talk to women and say, how does abortion affect your family? And you won't find too many of them that have anything.
I want to let Joe Ellen respond to that when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. Anita, stay right where you are. We'll be back to you in just a moment, okay? I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago, taking America's political pulse every Sunday night.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
We'll be right back. From Knoxville, Tennessee to New London, New Hampshire, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Joelle and Lynn, you wanted to make a comment?
Sure. I actually have a lot of sympathy with the last caller because I think women are pretty fed up with other people trying to speak for them. And I don't mean to speak for her. I think the point I'm trying to make is that Sarah Palin, who was handpicked by the men of the Republican Party to be the vice presidential nominee, does not necessarily represent, for instance, Hillary Clinton type voters. And we don't know, in terms of issues, whether she really would promote the interests of women or not. She didn't really tell us much about what she thinks about things like child care, tax credits for family-oriented kind of things. I know she likes...
Is she likely to know a little bit more about special needs from a parent's perspective than maybe anyone that's ever run in recent years?
I think she will in the future. Her baby is only a few months old, and I believe that she definitely will learn the challenges of having a special needs child up close and personally, and I'm sure it's already changed her life profoundly. But special needs parents are interested in the resources you're willing to put behind your promises or your expressions of sympathy. And as far as I know, the legislation you referred to, she had absolutely nothing to do with writing, but she did sign it into law. Wow. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but that was somebody else's idea. She's never really mentioned special needs until, of course, it impacted her own life.
Well, but she did sign. I mean, she's the governor. She signed almost a doubling of special needs funding.
But it wasn't her idea.
Well, Tom Bevin, you had a comment as well.
Well, yeah, to the caller's point, I mean, there was a profile in the Washington Post today, and the first two paragraphs, she drives her own family Suburban, shops at Walmart, and, carpools with the kids. I mean, that is why she made such a connection. And that's, I think, frankly, why she's so dangerous for Democrats. I mean, she was really – the pick of Sarah Palin
she's an average American.
It's absolutely blown up the presidential race and the conventional wisdom. Now the experience cuts both ways. Now we have gender. We have race. We have sort of feminists attacking a mom who's a working woman for actually being a successful working woman who's doing all that. We have the Republican base, defending her. I mean, it's absolutely thrown the presidential race on its head. And
It was a brilliant pick, wasn't it?
Yes, it absolutely was. I don't think the McCain camp, they had an idea of what they wanted to do. I don't think they had any idea that it was going to end up like this. And I think their strategy of keeping her away from the media is deliberate because they want these attacks to continue, because the more people attack her, the more well-liked she's going to be, not only by the conservative base, who's already all in favor of her anyway, but by people in general, just sort of regular working moms who are like, why is everyone attacking this woman?
Here's what I want to do
she's
right now.
She's very, very dangerous. They should ignore her altogether.
What I want to do is Real Clear Politics, by the way, if you don't know what it is, realclearpolitics.com covers the American political scene unlike no other website. They look at polls. They look at analytical pieces, columns. It's one-stop shopping for anything you want to know about politics. But I want to talk, since we've got the boss man right here, I want to go to the states that they have defined as the toss-up states. Most of the states at this particular moment, they're either clearly blue states and they will go for Obama. They're red states. They will go for McCain based on history, based on politics, based on the demographic of the state. There's a total of 126 electoral votes, 15 states, that is, in all likelihood, is where the presidency is going to be determined. I'd like to go through those states. I want to talk with you, Tom. We're going to talk more about it in the second hour, but I want to quickly go through it.
Sure.
I want you to answer one question. Does the addition of Joe Biden to the Democratic ticket, does the addition of Sarah Palin to the Republican ticket, does it make that ticket more likely or less likely to carry that state? That's the question.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Midwest toss-up states. Let's take a look at them. First of all, we've got Michigan at 17 electoral votes, Minnesota for 10, Missouri for 11, Iowa 7, Wisconsin for 10. Let's go through those states. Give us your analysis of who's likely to win those states based on what we know about the tickets now.
Well, let me just say first, I mean, both candidates, Biden and Palin, were not picked to help in any specific state. So and their appeal is to certain demographics,
blue collar ethnic voters.
Exactly, and we'll see. Exactly, so we'll see. It'll be tough to say whether they're going to add or you know, help in any one of these states. But I can say that, you know, Michigan is a state that voted Democratic in 04 and 00. McCain is he's trailing there by just a few percentage points, but they really think they have a shot to win in Michigan. Minnesota, Obama, it's an upper Midwest, sort of has that progressive traditional history, has been trending blue, and Obama had a big lead there, but McCain has really made up some ground. And I think that's a state, given that they had the convention there, I think that's a state where Palin might help on the margins, because she is, in many ways, she has that sort of Fargo accent. She's a hockey mom. I mean, the whole that whole profile probably fits her better in Minnesota than any other state. Missouri is a state that Obama wanted to put into play, flooded it with 150 volunteers, unlike any Democratic operation they've seen there. Hasn't paid much dividends. McCain's leading there.
Women run well there, and the Right to Life movement very strong in outside St. Louis.
That's right. No, so potentially she could help there. Iowa is you know, Obama's got a big lead there. That was a close state in 04 and 00, but Obama's got, I mean, this was sort of the place where he launched his run and has a pretty solid lead there. And Wisconsin's the same way, neighboring state here, and Obama has a solid lead there.
I'm going to ask next ones, and then we're going to do the rest of them in the next hour. But quickly, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, and Virginia. Very quickly, where do you think who's going to... Pennsylvania and Ohio again.
Well, Obama has a decent sized lead and has held a substantial or a consistent lead there, I should say. And that's going to be a state where John McCain, you know, wants to pick off, but he'll be hard pressed to do so. Florida is a state where Obama thinks he can register African American turnout and register a lot of new voters to give him a chance to play there. But so far, it's not paying off. He spent over $5 million and hasn't moved the numbers very much. Virginia is another place where Obama thinks, with Northern Virginia, with African-American turnout, he can turn that state into his column. It's close now in the polls, but I think most analysts would say it leans McCain. Obama's going to be hard-pressed, upset there. And Ohio is dead even, and it's going to be ground zero again this year as it was in 04.
We're going to talk more about it in the next hour. 1-800-723-8289 if you're watching us on television. See you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, we'll be right back. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Joellen Lind, Tom Bevin of RealClearPolitics.com, and John McCarron of Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Program lines are open, toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We're going to take more calls in just a moment, but I want to pick up on what we were discussing at the end of hour number one on radio, and that is we were talking about the 15 states that at least the political experts are saying are toss-up states. We've gone through the first couple of sections of the country. I want to now go to about five or six states. Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics, joins us, that were viewed as toss-up states. I look at this list. I'm not so sure I buy them as toss-up states anymore, because the Sarah Palin factor has not been filtered into these numbers as I understand them. We have Colorado with 9 electoral votes, Nevada with 5, New Mexico with 5, New Hampshire with 4, North Carolina with 15, Indiana with 11. I would say that Indiana, North Carolina, Colorado, and perhaps Nevada probably would be closer to solid McCain states, given the pick of Sarah Palin. Do you agree with that?
Well, I agree. You know, there was all this talk about Obama trying to expand the map and play in all these different states, including Alaska, by the way. North Carolina is one where he thought African-American turnout would sort of put him in the mix there. I don't think that's going to be the case. I also think Indiana is going to be a long shot for him. Colorado is actually very close. We've had recent polls, again, without the Palin factor in yet, but where it is pretty darn close. And I think Colorado is the other state in addition to Ohio that's going to decide this election. Nevada is leaning slightly McCain. New Mexico is leaning slightly Obama. But again, getting back to Sarah Palin's profile, you know, with McCain now and Palin, there is this sort of Western libertarianism that they have infused the ticket with. And that also could play well in New Hampshire, because New Hampshire has a lot of independence and McCain has deep roots there.
You know, we talked where Palin might help the ticket, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, Joe Biden and find out where he helps the ticket. John, in your view, where's the strength that he brings to this?
It's
ticket?
Right across the Rust Belt, in my view, Bruce. If you look at the states where Obama should have done better in the primary against Hillary, we're talking Ohio, Michigan, Rhode Island, where I'm from, very ethnic, Catholic, Irish, and Italian state. Obama just did terribly there vis-a-vis Clinton. And I think that's what Joe Biden is supposed to bring.
Is his appeal then more of an urban Catholic appeal, where her appeal is more rural evangelical?
I think you've hit it on the head. Yeah, I think he's there to deliver the hourly wage kind of folk, the lunch bucket folks, the Joe Sixpack and Mr. and Mrs.
Suburbanites might not be a real strong appeal for Sarah Palin. Is that how you see it, Joellen?
I really don't know. I thought it was really interesting that the symbolism has gone from soccer moms to hockey moms. What are we doing, throwing the soccer moms under the bus? I mean, I really don't know.
Kind of hard to play soccer with all that snow up in Alaska.
I understand, but it was the imagery of the pit bull, the lipstick, the hockey mom all together. It's kind of got me thinking maybe we're not really thinking about upper income suburban women.
What do you think of that? Well, let's talk about the suburban vote. Part of the discussion of this campaign has been that a lot of suburban voters, many of them Republicans, some might describe as moderate Republicans, that they might have a lot of appeal to Barack Obama. And so my question to you, Dan Proft, is by picking someone else who might be comfortable in that area, like a Joe Biden, who at least has the traditional look of a vice president, and given the nature of how Sarah Palin is being depicted by the media, that in fact someone described again in a pejorative way earlier today, they said she's being pushed by the Democrats almost as trailer trash. That might not play in a lot of suburban areas. So my question to you is, does she play well in suburban areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think she has the potential to. I think there's still this big learning curve. I mean, Joe Biden, I really don't think Joe Biden brings Barack Obama very much at all. I know he's, you know, being billed as the scrappy kid from Scranton, but that pick is completely at odds with Barack Obama's storyline that he's been pitching the country for the last 18 months, which is Washington's broken, Washington insiders are the problem, so here comes a 35-year Washington insider. I think Palin, her personal life experience, it probably mirrors a lot of suburban women's experience in terms of raising a family, doing a job, trying to balance hockey or soccer or whatever extracurriculars with a working life, a double income family. So, I mean, I think to the extent that I think she has a great ability to connect with those folks, because number one, and I think the speech on Wednesday night showed it, I think she comes across as very authentic, very genuine, very no nonsense. And I think that has some appeal.
Is this race going to be won or lost in the suburbs? As we've just sort of gone through the discussion, there seems to be some strengths of obviously Obama in urban areas, maybe with Biden's help, throwing in Catholic ethnic voters, and then you have the McCain element, in other areas. I mean, is that where this election's going to be won and lost, John?
Bruce, I'm a little bit of a local yokel when it comes to suburbs. I'm a Chicagoan, and we can see the Democrats keep doing better and better further and further out. I mean, they almost won the seat of Dennis Hastert recently by running a strong race out in an extremely Republican area.
They did win it.
Yeah. But I think as hardship moves further and further up, people get laid off, they lose their house, their property values go down, so they can't refund, et cetera, et cetera. As economic hardship moves out into the suburbs, I think the attitude about which party is on their side is going to change.
But you know what the thing? This is not about party. And John McCain is running well ahead of the generic Republican ballot test. And his sticking power in states like Michigan kind of is testament to that. So I think people, especially at the presidential level, they're really going to size up these two individuals. They're not voting for a party label. They're voting for these two teams.
And they're voting for the presidential candidate.
Yeah, I mean, historically, you know, the attributes of a vice president don't translate onto, I mean, you still have Barack Obama at the top. Is he going to fare any better with working class white voters in Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio than he did in the primaries because Joe Biden's with him? I doubt it. But
McCain is the type of Republican who historically would have done very well in suburban areas.
Yes.
Because he has an element of independence.
Absolutely.
And it was never perceived as a hard right guy. At least his rhetoric is not viewed
as. If you take out the fact that you know, you have 95% of African Americans voting for Obama, the biggest decider, the biggest divide in this election so far hasn't been race and hasn't been class, it's been age. It's absolutely across. I mean, you have younger voters voting for Obama, and the older voters voted for Hillary Clinton, and those voters who happen to be traditionally, especially in states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, more conservative. You know, they're going to vote for McCain. And so the question is, does Sarah Palin bring anything to them? Does Joe Biden bring anything to them? I doubt it. I mean, I think the dynamics of this race have been sort of set, and we'll see. I mean, it could be events that change this race in the end.
1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers. A little bit later on in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by an expert who's been following the role of the internet. And we're going to talk about that and journalism when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. From America's political headquarters in Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We have lots of callers on the line. Let us go to them. Let's go to Detroit, Michigan. Rob is listening to us on WOOD. Rob, nice to have you with us.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen and ladies.
How can we help you?
Yes, I just have a comment about the pro-life stance versus pro-choice stance that Obama could not admit on the Saddleback review, if that was the name. Mm-hmm. And just the hypocrisy that he wants to represent when he says the first African-American president, that in the African-American inner-city communities, if not the whole African-American group, two-thirds of their pregnancies are being terminated. And that is real human beings and two-thirds. And they say even in the D.C. area, it's up to 90%. And that smells like genocide, and it's very sad. That he will not make a stance. He won't even come out and say which side he stands on. I would think he's borderline pro-life, but it's like clearly that he's bought, and it's very sad. So that's my comment, just the hypocrisy there.
Borderline pro-life.
No, borderline pro-life he is definitely not, and he has a very undistinguished record in the state in the Illinois State Senate to highlight just how radically pro-abortion he is. He's not pro-choice. There's a difference. He's actually pro-abortion.
He did acknowledge today that he misspoke in the Saddleback debate. Not misspoke, but he
said he was being too flip. His answer was too flip.
Too flip, and it was. I think that's going to be one of the defining, you know, at least comments
the above his pay grade.
But is he really pro-abortion?
Yeah.
How do you mean that?
How do
pro
I mean that?
Pro-abortion. You know, he likes abortions. He wants more abortions. Is that what you're suggesting?
I mean that.
Tell us more.
There is no restriction. I'll tell you. I'll tell you more. I'm happy to. Thank you for asking. The live birth abortion, the gruesome practice of live birth abortion.
That happens a lot, does it?
One time is too many.
Oh.
And again, this was a measure that was introduced in the Illinois State Senate, a similar measure introduced in the U.S. Senate that passed 98-0. Even people that are pro-choice like Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy mustered the courage to vote for the ban. Barack Obama voted against it in Illinois. That is radical on that issue.
Well,
go ahead, and then we're going to go back to calls.
I'd have to join in with my colleague over here. I don't think that Barack Obama or anybody is pro-abortion, and to describe people who are pro-choice as pro-abortion is, you know...
Not describing people. I'm describing Barack Obama.
Well, you're wrong.
Let's go to Mike in Park Ridge, Illinois on WLS. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Okay.
Let me tell you why the McCain pick of Sarah Palin, the one-hit wonder, is not going to work. The first reason is he totally turned off the independent voters out there, because the independent voters were very upset with the Sarah Palin pick because she panders to the social conservative, and she might have energized the base, but she did nothing for the independent voters who wanted more of a moderate person on the ticket. That's number one. Number two, the hard right, whether you like it or not, they like George W. Bush. They might not be happy with him during his second term, and they probably want more things done out of him, but they do like George W. Bush. And McCain keeps getting up there, constantly repeating himself on how they screwed it up for the last 8 years and how they go ahead and went to Washington to make change, but Washington changed them. And if I was the Obama campaign, I would take all these little clips from McCain and put it on a commercial and run it through all 50 states from now until November 4th. Hit that thing out of the park and let people know how much messed it up for the last 8 years.
But, Mike, is that contradictory to your earlier statement? Because don't independents basically agree that things got screwed up in the last 8 years? So they would like,
I'm sorry,
John, don't you think that independents, you say that independents are going to be upset with the Palin pick, but aren't independents going to be pleased if he's slapping George Bush around? Independence, don't you think they will like that, because it will demonstrate that he's a maverick and independent? He's not going up there kowtowing, saying that everything that George Bush did for the last 8 years was great.
Did you lose him?
Hello?
No.
I think I stumped him.
Let me just say, Bruce, I think that that's one of the things about the Palin pick, and I don't know if we discussed this on the air or off the air earlier, but it really does. It has energized the base. They're all in now. They're coming out. And that allows McCain a lot of flexibility to go wherever he wants to go, say whatever he wants to say. And he does have his maverick image largely intact coming out of the primaries, and he is able to go places and really, again, people are going to vote for the top of the ticket. And if John McCain can go out and make that argument, and he is running pretty strong among independents right now, if he can make that sale to them that he's not a third term of George Bush, he's his own man, that's what he tried to do with his speech, that's what he's going to try and do over the next 58 days, if he can make that sale, you know, he's got a shot to win this thing.
Can you give me one example of a specific issue, not rhetoric, an issue where he is bucking George Bush, a significant issue?
Well, I can tell you where he bucked his party, obviously.
And George Bush.
Just give me one.
The surge?
No. Well, I'm not talking old news. I'm talking now. What is he going to do with regard to the future? For instance, the economy. Has he decided that he's not in favor of keeping the tax cuts permanent?
No, but I mean, look.
Okay. Where's the big change then?
What? He was against. He was against the
I'm not
Medicare.
Talking was. I'm talking the future now.
Well, but if he's going to distinguish himself from George W. Bush, George W. Bush is not running for president. So,
right.
You know. You have to look at what he did when he was in the Senate, when he was with George W. Bush.
Well, I'll just repeat that the Economist magazine, no radical publication, is calling him Bush 3, and that just came out last week.
What? Okay, well, the Economist magazine is not going to, of which I'm a subscriber, I love it, but that's not going to move the election to this country, and the record is the record.
I just like a specific example, and I guess there isn't one.
How many specific examples do you need? For 8 years, on major pieces of legislation, he was opposed to the president and to his party.
He's changed his mind, apparently.
That's his mind. He was right to change his mind on tax cuts, and guess what? Oh. That's where a majority of Americans are, too. Raising taxes, doubling the tax on investment income, like Barack Obama's proposing, is not where the majority of the country
clear.
Is.
I just wanted to get it clear.
They're clear.
And can you give an example of where Barack Obama is likely to disagree with the Democratic Party? on a significant issue, either past or future.
I think the Democratic Party doesn't have the same problem the Republican Party has, which is it's not trying to run against itself. And I think it's unified, and he's actually moving it in the direction of a more centrist position.
But
so I don't think the Democrats have the problem of a sitting president with a 70% disapproval rating.
Well, but
no, they have a sitting Congress.
Congress has a worse disapproval rating.
I think part of that's because it's hard for people to understand that we don't have a filibuster-proof Congress, so it's difficult to get things through a president that's going to veto any significant
legislation. So all those people who voted for a Democratic Congress because they really thought that the war was going to be stopped and funding was going to be cut off, they were fed a line by the Democrat candidates?
I think that the Democratic Party in Congress deserves some criticism for that. It's a lot harder to get that done. It's a lot more complicated, especially given who you've got sitting in the White House.
Did Barack Obama do it, though? I mean, what did Barack Obama do to try to lead his Democratic Party in that respect?
Well, he's one of the first people who stood up to say that he was against the war in the first place. That's a distinguishing feature between him and Hillary Clinton.
He wasn't in office.
I understand.
Or even necessarily running for office. And once he got to office,
Did he ever vote to defund it? Did Joe Biden ever vote to defund it?
Well, the problem you have with doing that is then you're accused of not supporting the troops.
He did, in fact.
Yeah, so.
Said it was a symbolic vote.
So he was afraid of political perception over what he thought was right. So he went with political perception.
John, one question I want to ask you, and then we're going to go back to calls. This may be an inside, politics, question, but one of the strongest criticisms, I think, that's been made of Barack Obama, and I thought it was really hit home by Rudy Giuliani, when he talked about the number of 130 present votes in the Illinois General Assembly. Now, you've covered the legislature.
Right.
You're a lifelong.
Right.
What does it say to you as a reporter and as a voter? What does it say to you about that large number of present votes?
Well, it says a couple of things. One, Rudy Giuliani doesn't know much about the Illinois legislature, for one, because the euphemism is it's a leadership legislature. There's only four votes that count, and that's the leaders of the four houses, the minority and majority leader of the Senate and the House. Blah, blah. They go into a smoke-filled room. They decide how all their members are going to vote, and the members are there, and they vote on the key votes. So there's a lot of times you don't get on the plane and fly down to Springfield to vote for something doesn't make a difference. Another thing it could mean, Bruce, is that maybe he wasn't looking ahead to the fact that he might one day be running for the Senate or the presidency, and then, maybe if he were more political in the way he thought about his future, he would have made it down for all those meaningless votes.
There's actually some very meaningful piece of legislation he voted present on, and we're not talking about absent. He wasn't, or excused absences. We're talking about a vote came up. He, instead of yes or no, for or against, he voted present. Like, showing up is good enough. And one other point, too, in terms of when we're talking about experience in states where these folks rise up, since not a lot is known about Obama or Palin. In Illinois, which is the capital of political corruption in this country, Chicago, where you've got every other day there's somebody get indicted or convicted. Barack Obama, for 7 years in the Illinois State Senate, was quiet as a church mouse about corruption going on all around him. Compare that to Sarah Palin, who took on her own party, ran against an incumbent governor, and won, throughout other Republicans who she thought had engaged in ethical lapses. I mean, there's somebody who showed leadership in her state, regardless of if she ever thought she was going to be vice president or president of the United States.
Let's let Joe Allen respond to that. Difference in who was the true reformer?
Between Palin and Obama?
Yeah.
I think if you look into the actual facts of her rise in the state of Alaska, she's not as far apart from Ted Stevens as she probably wishes she had been now. So I really don't want to go there.
She led the fight within the state against him.
Not really.
And against Murkowski's, Ted Stevens'
best friend.
We could go through it chapter and verse. That's really not the true story, as a matter of fact. I mean, she showed up at a public appearance to tell people that...
Is there any evidence of Barack Obama ever speaking out against corruption before it was elected?
I'll let you think about that.
The answer is no. 1-800-723-8299. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Anchorage, Alaska to Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Joining us this evening, our Democrat, is Jo Ellen Lynn. She is Professor of Law and Associate Dean for Faculty Development at Valparaiso University in Valparaiso, Indiana. That's Valparaiso University School of Law. John McCarron also joins us. He is an adjunct lecturer at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, and for 27 years was a reporter and many years as a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And speaking of Northwestern, a graduate of Northwestern University is Dan Proft, who joins us. He is a political operative and also a commentator for Don Wade and Roma. They're the morning team on our flagship station, WLS Radio in Chicago. And Tom Bevan joins us. He is the publisher and founder of RealClearPolitics.com, and that is the premier website dealing with politics in America. RealClearPolitics.com. If it's not your favorite, it's got, you know, at least for the next couple of months, you got to be checking it every single day. Put it on your mobile device, because I got a new mobile device. I've come into the 21st century, and I now have a mobile device. I have one of these new Instinct Samsungs, and it does everything except make popcorn, and I'm sure if I read the instructions, it'll tell me how I can make popcorn, too. 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Sam listening to us in Chicago on WLS. Go ahead, Sam.
How are you, Bruce?
Okay.
I have a point that I'd like to make, but answering how does George Bush and John McCain differ, outstanding difference, torture. John McCain was an outspoken, vigilant aggressive opponent of waterboarding and torture. How about the president is for an amendment for same-sex marriage? John McCain's not for such a constitutional amendment.
Is he still against torture? Because a lot of the speakers at the Republican convention were making fun of the Supreme Court even for sticking up for constitutional rights of prisoners.
Yeah, you know, I like the quips I hear from both of the Democratic or the liberal candidates. What do you think? So I don't get cut off because I have.
Let's let our Democrat respond. You came up with two very specific things, visibility things. Let Joe Ellen.
John McCain still against torture.
Let's let Joe Ellen respond. Go ahead, Joe Ellen.
I guess my response would be that there was a strong statement against torture by people at the Democratic convention and by Barack Obama, I think, in particular. I may be confusing it with Biden. I'm not sure.
But if you just
let me finish, I'll just try to be quick. I don't think you heard the word torture in anything that John McCain said in his speech or anything that any other keynote speaker said at the Republican National Convention.
But it's part of his permanent record, isn't it?
The speech is history. You said, are they different? The president thought waterboarding was an acceptable method of interrogation. John McCain said waterboarding is torture.
I think he should say it now, and he isn't.
So then there is a difference.
I think that John McCain should come out now against waterboarding, and he just isn't. He's silent.
Let me ask a question. In the last 20 years, Joe Ellen.
Exactly.
Can you name one Democratic member of the United States Senate that has come out repeatedly against the leadership of the Democratic Party or a Democrat incumbent president on any significant issue? Name one. Can you name one U.S. senator?
That's a tough question. Let me see. Okay.
20 years. Maybe 25 years.
All right. How about any senator who's a Democrat who's against the war in Vietnam?
That's beyond 20
years. Sorry. I'm beyond the time limit.
Go ahead. No, I mean, seriously, I'm trying to look at Democrat members.
What has that got to do with the point I just made about John McCain?
Because I'm going to make it right now. Democrats in the United States Senate, Republicans in the United States Senate, look at the track record of the last 25 years and give me the name of a Democrat member of the Senate who had the gumption and stick-to-itiveness and courage to stand up and speak against his party or his president when there was a Democratic president. Because I want to compare that against several instances where John McCain did things that were unpopular with his base, unpopular with his president. I mean, you know, he says that he would never get Miss Congeniality in Washington. It's true. A lot of the members of the U.S. Senate do not like John McCain. He's not one of the boys.
And they're mostly Republicans.
Well, maybe you can give me a Democratic president who's been in favor of torture, and then I can.
That's not the question. I'm asking you a question.
Yeah.
I'm asking you a question.
Can I help you
one
out here?
U.S.
Yeah, help me out here. Throw me a bone.
I'm sure there are examples of during the Clinton presidency where you had Southern senators like Sam.
Right.
Sam Nunn.
Not Sam Nunn.
Well, there were Democrats.
I'm sorry,
that were
Zell
against,
Miller, for example, who were against, for example, gays in the military. Universal health care. I'm sure there were plenty of, you know, Southern senators or conservative senators who came. Joe Lieberman came out against Bill Clinton, for his impeachment chastised him on the floor of the Senate. So
yes.
There are some examples, but not
point.
In the same way
you,
that John McCain probably.
You're going to make one last point. Go ahead.
I'm telling you, Bruce, this is the big point. Because you know what? It led in when you guys were talking about where the support is at, and they said accept for black voters. We're accepting black voters from any analysis here. I think John McCain should go aggressively for black voters in this country, and that's what he ought to be arguing change is about. He ought to be using Chicago alone. In Chicago, 125 murders. You have Reverend Meek saying the schools are crap, and he, John McCain.
There's an old saying in politics: you go hunting where the ducks are, and the ducks are not going to be there in
yes,
this particular.
Yes, they are.
No. I beg to differ with you. The one interesting thing I think that could have an appeal within the African American community, however, and it was kind of interesting to see sort of a new issue be introduced by John McCain during the centerpiece of his speech the other night, and that is when he brought up the issue of school choice and vouchers.
That's just it. School choice. Rudy Giuliani talked about in the primary. John McCain correctly identified it as the civil rights issue of the 21st century. And I'll tell you what, I've been at odds with where John McCain's been on a lot
of
issues
a big
too.
Fan.
But let me tell you something. That is tremendous political courage, tremendous leadership to bring that issue up, because that issue is really about kids in failing inner city schools in Chicago, in Philadelphia, in Detroit, in the 17 school districts in this country, 17 out of the top 50 most populous cities in this country who have high school graduation rates under 50%. And John McCain is not going to win Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit. So he deserves very high marks for bringing that up as a civil rights issue of the 21st century.
I want to get your response to that, John.
Well, I'm not sure it took great courage, because he's probably not going to get a lot of votes from the teachers' unions around the country. And frankly, that is really an Achilles heel of the Democratic Party, the low quality of the public schools, and also the undue influence that the teachers' union and the trial lawyers have on the Democratic Party.
Tom, Bevan.
I've got to agree with McCain campaign manager Rick Davis. He said this last week. He took a lot of heat for it. The Obama campaign has been using it. But this election is not about is not going to be about issues. It's not going to be about school choice. It's not. We have two insurgent candidates who are running largely on the strength of their bios, which is why they were such a prominent part of both conventions. Okay,
too prominent.
The Democrats want to frame this election as a third term of George Bush. Forget specific issues. Are you better off now than you were 8 years ago? If the answer is no, then Barack Obama is probably going to win this election. The problem is, and what the McCain camp wants, is this election to be a referendum on Barack Obama. Can you accept this man with his experience, race perhaps, his past associations, all of those things, irrespective of issues? Can the country accept him, and will they vote for him? If the answer is yes, he'll win. If the answer is no, he's going to lose.
Knoxville, Tennessee is the place. Judd, listening to us on WNOX. Go ahead, Knoxville.
Yes, I'm calling about why the Democrats refuse to drill for oil. Why is it okay to drill off the coast of Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, but it's not okay to drill off the coast of North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, California? What makes those coasts so special that we can't drill off them? And why are the Democrats, and Pelosi in particular, not allowing a vote to come to the floor?
Joe Ellen Lind.
I'm having a tough night here tonight, folks. But that's okay. I'll try to rise to the challenge. I don't think there's anything particularly special about Alaska. I think the real point is, what should be the long-term strategy to make us independent of foreign sources of oil? If we open up the Alaska reserves, it's a 10-year lag time. There's nothing that would indicate that those companies would sell that oil back to the United States. I mean, what are we going to do, nationalize the oil companies that drill in Alaska? They're going to sell the oil on the open market to anybody who wants to buy it, including the Chinese. It's not going to change things.
Until very recently, we've had Republican Congress in both houses, and they were in no hurry to open the door to offshore dwelling.
Gas was $1.50 a
gallon. It's one of the really clever jujitsus of political jujitsus of the last year or so has been when we should be talking about runaway mortgage brokers and the excesses of capitalism and free marketism and deregulated utilities.
Instead, we're talking the Democratic base of the low income and low middle income people the hardest, and I don't understand why they want to deny the oil companies access.
You know,
where oil is where it's not at.
John,
if you could talk to the oil companies and tell them to start drilling and stop buying back their stock.
Well,
that makes no sense to me. Well, they're greedy. They'll drill where the oil is. They're greedy. Drill where the oil is.
Well, there's two issues. One is Democrats are starting to get the message, because both Obama and Pelosi have kind of backed off and said, well, drilling could be part of a larger, more comprehensive strategy. But so they're getting the message, because they're feeling the heat from exactly the folks that the caller mentioned. But I agree with John, too, in the point that was made kind of implicitly. Both parties are at fault for not being long-term thinkers on energy independence, just as both parties are at fault for not being long-term thinkers on a range of issues. Yeah. But this is not something where McCain or Obama have any particular advantage over each other.
1-800-723-8289, Rochester, New York. We're going to hear from you in a moment. She believes that Sarah Palin is not a good example for America. She will elaborate when we roll on from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From New York City to Los Angeles, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway on some of America's great radio stations and XM satellite radio, POTUS 130. And again, each and every week, if you go back to the beginning of this year, we've had virtually every week on this program, we've had a representative during the primary season representing all sides that debated the issues that ended up with Barack Obama and John McCain getting their nominations. And we've taken you through the primary season. We've taken you through the convention season. We're heading up now to the debate season and the final 58 days of this campaign. And my pledge to you is that each and every week we're going to have a strong McCain supporter, a strong Barack Obama supporter on every program. And then the other two guests are going to be people, maybe one leaning a little bit to the left, the other leaning a little bit to the right. Fair and balanced, Beyond the Beltway, long before it was fashionable, my friends. We were fair and balanced, and will continue to do so. Mary, I gave you a little lead-in. I said you were from Rochester, New York, and you do not believe that Sarah Palin is a good example for America. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Why?
I think she was given a lot of credit for something that she didn't even do. I mean, as a mother, she's a failure. I mean, she does not have any control over her family. that his child is pregnant. She didn't know it. And McCain made a big mistake. He didn't know about it. Or even if he knew, he made a poor choice by picking her up. It's not an example for the American mother that she takes care of her kids and pay attention and make sure they don't get into mistakes. She has a child who's 4 months old with a problem, and she probably has not seen that kid for a while. So what kind of mother is this?
Thank you for the call, because you're just driving people right into the McCain camp. Callers who are gonna, or Democrats who are going to come and attack Sarah Palin in terms of what kind of mother she is, because she has she works and she has a infant child. Somebody that's going to attack Sarah Palin because her daughter had a child out of wedlock. Like, oh, I don't know, 40% of the nation, single mothers. This is exactly the type of attacks where leftists show that ideology is more important than gender and minority status.
But Dan, would you acknowledge, though, that if the shoe were on the other foot, because I have heard conservatives and Republicans over the years, when the sons or daughters of Democratic candidates, they for president, there will be a comment made, whether it is the drunk driving charge against Al Gore or pot smoking by one of the Gore children as well. I mean, it does work the other way, and it has been used as an example that you know, if they only would have stayed home, maybe the kid wouldn't
it works both ways, and both parties were wrong. You know, the Bush daughters were covered as party girls.
Right.
I mean, it absolutely, both parties have been at fault on this. Both parties have played this card to their detriment all the time. It is exactly the wrong play, because a lot of folks out there are kind of looking at Sarah Palin, especially with the daughter who has the out of wedlock pregnancy, as there, but for the grace of God, go I with my children. It's not easy. They understand it. They think
it's the fear of every parent.
They think she's dealing with it beautifully, because she is. So you want to attack Sarah Palin in terms of the quality of mom she is, or the situation with her teenage daughter? Go ahead at it, because you're just driving people to the McCain camp.
Does it? And again, I want to get your reaction, John. You've got your mouth ready
to
drop here.
I've been very impressed at the open-mindedness of all my Republican friends over this issue. But I have a feeling that if it were Chelsea Clinton who we were talking about, maybe they wouldn't be quite as forgiving.
That's not the case.
You are, before we go off the air, I do want to talk. You are an adjunct lecturer at Medill School of Journalism. Obviously, journalism has been a focal point in this campaign already, specifically at the convention. Sarah Palin going after the national media, getting a huge round of applause. And the last time I saw anyone from a Republican platform go after the media was Dwight Eisenhower in 1964, and it was popular then, and obviously Agnew did it, not at a convention. My question to you is, because of the rumors, we talk about on this program, we've talked about it for 30 years now, rumors and innuendos. Rumors and innuendos in political campaigns frequently get into the mainstream. Frequently, those rumors and innuendos turn out to be correct. In this particular case, given what the National Enquirer has already reported, do you expect significant more shoes to fall? And when does a story in the National Enquirer, when does it reach a point where it should be covered by the Chicago Tribune or the New York Times or the major television networks?
Well, I think, yes, there will be more shoes to fall, because we know so little about, for instance, Sarah Palin, that there's going to be good shoes and bad shoes that are going to fall. People are going to be giving testimonials on her behalf, and we're going to find out maybe she said something at one of those PTA meetings 10 years ago that doesn't reflect well on her open mind.
What about affairs, though? What about affairs? As a mainstream journalist, your training is mainstream journalism. When does an alleged affair become legitimate fodder for a reporter?
Well, I don't think an alleged affair does at all, unless there's some sort of corroboration, or probably more likely it becomes a news story, that the person who is quote-unquote accused reacts to it, or, you know, starts to move the political needle. Then I think the mainstream media can't ignore it forever. By the way, I'm not much of a blogger, but I found myself in that when it was first disclosed that there was a pregnancy in the family, I found myself going through all the blogs just to find out. Someone said there was a MySpace page involving the young gentleman, and the only place you got that was on the internet.
Last word to you.
John Edwards was caught in the basement. of the Beverly Hills Hilton was carrying on an affair for months, and it didn't get reported by the mainstream press. Sarah Palin, this desperate housewives subplot, came off a blog, and all of a sudden reporters were asking for her amniotic fluid to be tested. And
on that note, we're out of time. I wish we could talk more about it, but we will talk about all kinds of things in the coming weeks on this program each and every Sunday night. Our thanks to our card-carrying conservative, Dan Proft. Our liberal tonight and our Democrat has been Jo Ellen Lynn. Jo Ellen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
John McCarron from Northwestern and Tom Bevan from RealClearPolitics.com. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. And our thanks to Tom Vera-Cruz and Kevin Fuller for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.